Dear friends, happy 2021. I have never written my monthly hedgegram with so much surprise, wonder, and dismay than the one I'm writing today. For the first time ever, I sent friends and family a holiday newsletter. I wrote it in response to all the touching holiday letters I have received. As for myself, the year wasn't a bad one. If I could blank out the empathy for others who have had bad years, but I have missed my family, friends, and the large group of pals that I know from the publishing and bookstore worlds, concerts, poultry shows, and road races. I think so many of us have felt this curious detachment, and it invites a lot of musings about how we've assembled our lives. Every year, month by month, I write a hedgegram describing what takes place in my children's book creations. I've always hoped other people will be as fascinated by children's literature as I am and would find it interesting. I have been watching YouTube offerings titled A Day in the Life of Ballerina and found them entertaining and thought-provoking. Maybe someone will find creating a children's book illustrating too. This month, I am going to do something different and rewrite Joe and my personal holiday letter. Joe and I miss seeing our loved ones, relatives, and friends. This is our first Christmas letter, and I hope it brings us closer to all of you. 2020 really started with a great send-off in December 2019. We went on a three-week book tour on the big bus the publisher provides for us, and we sort of see America. We definitely meet many book lovers and visit wonderful bookstores. Joe and I barely unpacked before we headed out to Alaska to celebrate my big birthday at the Sheldon Chalet. Growing up in Boston, our family loved going to the Museum of Science. Explorer Bradford Washburn was the head of the museum and was admired for being the first to map Denali. You could see the room-sized model of the mountain at the museum when I was little. He and his bush pilot colleague, Don Sheldon, had a camp on a pinnacle of rock jutting out of the Ruth Glacier near the summit of Denali, which served as their high-altitude camp. All these years later, Don's children built a small hotel next to the original cabin, and that's where we went for my birthday. The tiny building sits in a huge glacial bowl surrounded by mountains. We happened to be the only guests, but we had the company of three adventuring guides and a chef. The helicopter that brought us up there also brought Alaskan seafood and all sorts of wild foods like black spruce buds and devil club shoots. It was all very cozy and romantic, and if there is ever a next time, I'm going to make myself go snowboarding. I wimped out this time. High on the list of highlights of our Alaska trip was seeing daughter Leah and husband Tom in Eagle River, where they retired after 21 years in the Marine Corps. Their two children, Torin, 10, and Brian, 8, are living the Alaskan life, skiing and hiking, and much to my delight, reading. We also spent time in Talkeetna, staying in Bell's cabin in town and visiting the Talkeetna Historical Society, where we met a famous alpinist who told us about his expedition summiting the mountain. The original room-sized model of Denali that we saw as kids in Boston is installed at that museum. Outside of town, we visited Dallas Seavey's Iditarod-winning Alaskan Huskies kennel. We even got to mush a team ourselves on an hour-long loop through the forest. The dogs were super spirited and joyful, and the kennels were immaculate. The grand finale was when the puppies were brought in into the warming hut for us to play with and get puppy bites from. Our family dog was a Siberian Husky, and we laughed and laughed remembering her escapades. Before we left, we drove up to Palmer to see my muskox friends, Teal and Little Man, as well as Mark, the curator of the muskox farm, and colleagues, Carrie and Danny and Jamie. We came home to spend time with daughter Michelle, who is curator of a small museum near Albany, and her children, Katie, who is also an artist like Torn and Brian, and Zoli, who's interested in music, especially percussion. Then the Hearn part of the family met up in Knoxville, where Sean moved to a new job as head of one of the Oak Ridge labs after years in Albuquerque at the government lab there. His wife, Catherine, continues to work as a psychologist, particularly with war veterans. Back home in January, I was working away on my cozy book, which features an Alaskan muskox, and washing my exhibition Bantam chickens for our big two-day show in January. The chickens did well, but little did I know that it would be the last show for a long time. I raise about 100 youngsters, but I only keep 3 or 4 future champions or individuals that possess a trait I want to amplify. All the rest I place among fellow fanciers. But this year, there were no shows. So I have a lot of chickens. Luckily, I stopped hatching after one after another event canceled. There are 3 of us sisters, and we have remained very close over the years. Not only do I admire them and love their company, but they are my best friends. Sophie lives in New Hampshire and Jeannie in Maine. Then, Jeannie's 3 adult children moved one by one to Montana. Of course, Jeannie and Greg wanted to be near them, and they bought an amazing house on a bluff, they call it a bench, overlooking the Madison River, famous for trout fishing, in Ennis, Montana. They love the life of the Wild West, and last summer made their final move out there. The silver lining is that 2 of the kids have married and will make their homes in Montana, and celebrations are planned hopefully next summer, and Jeannie will have a great place to create her art. When my dad died at 62 years old, we were all devastated. Not long after, I had a very vivid dream when he came back to say goodbye. I said, "Daddy, what can I do for you? What are your wishes?" This was in my dream. He said, "For us 3 girls to stay together and protect each other and always stay close." The dream had such potency, and all these years later, I think we have all tried to realize his wish, much to our benefit, speaking for myself, of course. We will have to try hard and remain connected, but it is a big change for the sisters. Sophie was supposed to go on a Boston Symphony trip to Asia with Joe and me last spring. Sister Jeannie had gone with us in the BSO a few years ago to Japan. Sophie, who teaches, had to get special permission. She had to take a leave of absence, and we were all very excited to go. But the day before the instruments were about to leave, preceding the musicians and guests in early February, after rumblings about a nasty flu, the tour was canceled. Almost all the concert halls were closing in Asia. It was a big disappointment, and soon after, the BSO spring concerts and Tanglewood was also canceled. In the last few weeks, with strict guidance, Joe has been playing again. It is his 58th season. The BSO has built a huge extension on the stage, and the musicians wear masks and sit 6 feet apart. No audience. We are all eager for Symphony Hall to be full of BSO music lovers again, something we took for granted. With our air travel curtailed, in March we took a trip to Knoxville in the Tesla before the COVID cases mounted up so we could meet Sean's family at Dancing Bear Resort in the Smokies, all masked and socially distanced. We were able to visit with grandson Patrick, home from Arizona State at Flagstaff, and his little sister Charlotte, 6, and her brother Isaac, now 4. Isaac is a ringer for Sean at that age with curly red hair. So cute. That was our last trip of 2020. One silver lining was when we were at home in Norwell, when we were supposed to be exploring the Kenai Peninsula in Alaska, I would have missed the experience of finding a weird foxglove in the backyard. Instead of a typical spire, it ended in a huge terminus flower that looked like a large poppy, only colored like a foxglove, white with pink spots and splotches. I took a photo and emailed it to my cousin, Leslie Van Berkum, who has a nursery and is a plant expert, and she said it was a known but unusual mutation called Digitalis monstrosa, or hopeful monster in Greek. It was an amazing event for me, especially since it was first documented by Linnaeus. On the subject of silver linings, I'm working on a version of the Nutcracker. Having been enchanted by Tchaikovsky's score more times than I can count in Symphony Hall with Joe playing double bass, I decided to illustrate it. There are many characters and details, and I'm spending lots of happy hours listening to the music as I work. As a diversion, I've been reading E.O. Wilson's books on evolutionary biology. I've been carried away by his curiosity and strength of purpose. I know he was a professor at Harvard, and I wonder if he ever went to symphony. We had a great time at our camp on Goose Pond over the summer. Every week we would walk the grounds at Tanglewood, which was very poignant. Yo-Yo and Manny Axe were doing some amazing recordings in the new state-of-the-art recording studio at the Lindy Center, but probably not when we were there. We were looking forward to being at the Lindy Center next summer for all their offerings, lectures, and chamber music right on Tanglewood grounds. The center is really visionary, and we will be ever grateful to Joyce Lindy, Cindy and Ollie Kerm, and many others for making it a reality. It is such an epicenter for talent and inspiration. I got a lot of running in up at Goose Pond and the endless gravel roads that are pretty much carless. Lots of chances to see wildlife. My big endurance race was canceled in April and has now been postponed to 2021. I have an amazing coach, and I was very excited about competing in a new age group. If I didn't have this coach, I don't know if I could have kept up with my running. It is interesting to contemplate how much competition is a motivator. Our last silver lining has been our weekly car picnics to the Coast Guard beach on the Cape. I have a friend who makes beautiful lodge baskets, and we have a special meal. BLTs made with smoked salmon, roasted tomatoes, capers, and arugula on my homemade bread that we pack it in. Then we add cucumber salad made the Hungarian way, asparagus, and sometimes strawberry shortcake, but mostly a piece of black and green dark chocolate. There is a 1920s era Coast Guard station there with a beautiful outlook. The beach is deserted because we don't go in summer and it feels really wild. We saw piping plovers in the spring, and now we see huge seals really close in. The seals are looking to see if we have fishing rods so they can steal the fish. No kidding. There's a lot of signage about the great whites and even a satellite phone for emergencies. But we wouldn't get in that water for anything. There are serious riptides and it is always a very primal feeling. The biggest month for sharks is October, but we haven't seen a fin. We did rewatch Jaws. We had a cozy Christmas in the Berkshires at the Old Inn on the Green in New Marlborough. Peter Platt is the most talented chef we know, and the inn is so lovely, lit only by candlelight. We stopped for a few minutes at our camp on Goose Pond. I was waiting through the deep snow in my velvet flats for our dinner on the inn. That was the downside. But then the upside, huge cat footprints, had to be a wildcat. They are around but rarely seen. Here's to a restorative 2021 and lots of new adventures and new paths taken. Happy creating, your friend Jan Bratton.